Hello and welcome back to Coffee with Conservationists, the podcast where I sit down with people who dedicate their lives to researching, protecting and documenting nature. I talk to them about issues affecting wildlife, the climate and global biodiversity. We cover diverse topics within ecology, biology, storytelling, activism and much more. My coffee feature today is Landmark Coffee. As usual, I'll be talking more about them at the end of the episode. Apologies if I sound a little bit nasally in this week's intro and outro. At the time of recording these little bits to be edited into the podcast, I am recovering from a heavy cold, so I'm a little sneezy still. In today's episode, I speak to Lucy Grabe Watson. Lucy is a self-confessed tree lover, campaigner, Woodland Trust 2023 Igniting Innovation winner, and most importantly for this episode, the founder of the campaign HN Woodlands UK. So, hi Lucy, welcome to the podcast. Thank you so much for taking the time to come on, and also for reaching out and wanting to talk about what you talk about, which is a rare thing. Usually I have to contact guests, the other way around.
Yeah.
We'll start this off, as I usually do, by just getting you to talk about yourself and where your interests where your interest in the natural world first started and why you're doing what you're doing today.
Yeah, so I think my interest first started both with like when woodlands would come up in books I was reading about, because initially I didn't live somewhere that was super close to a lot of nature or a lot of woodlands, but I always thought they sounded so magical in these descriptions. And then I started sort of doing some work experience in my teens and did a woodland nearby, and I just absolutely loved it. And I've always sort of had that connection to trees when you walk through them and you just feel like you're connected to the past and like the future, and it's just a really special feeling. So I think that's like where my main passion for the natural world came from.
Yeah, that's a great story. And yeah, we talked briefly before we started recording, you wanted to touch on the mental and physical health benefits, which I think is a nice place to start before we get into the more campaigning side of things of what we're talking about today. So you felt really connected to woodlands as you're walking through them. For my listeners who don't know about the kind of widely spread information that's now available on that, could you tell us a bit about that from a scientific perspective?
Yeah, so really when you walk through somewhere that's natural and away from a lot of buildings and things, it's been proven that it changes certain levels of like hormones and things. It's not really my specialism as an area, but you can just feel it. Even if you just go somewhere that makes you feel peaceful and relaxed, and you know what it feels like if you've been for a run or a walk in a natural place and how different you feel compared to just staying in a city.
Yeah, I wanted to kind of get your opinion and perspective on it, not just from it's a whole other podcast episode that we can unpack in itself. I definitely like to talk about that in the future at some point, but yeah, just to kind of get how you feel about it really. And which leads us on to why you're doing what you're doing. So you want to talk about HN Woodlands UK, which is a really important and relatively new campaign. And a lot of people who listen to my podcast or follow me, personally as on my personal account and as a photographer and on my podcast account, know how I feel about HN Woodlands and also how important they are. But let's get the message out as widely as we possibly can. So tell us a bit more about HN Woodlands UK.
So it's a campaign that started when I saw an advert from the Woodland Trust to fund young people's projects, campaigns. So I'd done some campaigning previously on like local issues around green space access and things like that. But I've always had really strong feelings about woodlands being lost and how, people can just come in and cut them down overnight and you have the sense of powerlessness that you can't do anything about it. And especially I think when they're ancient woodlands that have been with us they have to be with us for over 400 years to be classed as ancient woodland. So that's a really long time. So to think that somebody could just come in and take that away so quickly, just for something quite temporary in a way, over that long scale perspective, that's something that I always found really upsetting. So that was something that I wanted to address. And I thought, this is a chance that I could actually make a difference and get other people, because I think a lot of people feel that way actually about trees. And it's really something that I think is achievable, that we could get a change in the law and the protection on that. So that really inspired me to get started.
Amazing. And how, what's kind of the updates? I know you really recently launched, but how's it going?
Yeah, it's going really well. We've got 500 signatures on our petition so far, and we just launched recently. So we're just getting the momentum going at the moment. We've got a small team of young people involved, but we're always looking for more people as well who want to get involved with the campaigning side of things and creating content for our channels as well.
Yeah, amazing. What's why Ancient Woodlands? Obviously, I know how important they are to biodiversity and the wider ecosystems around them, and by extension, us as part of nature. But why specifically do they need protection more than, say, your average woodland?
Yeah, so ancient woodlands are sort of habitat that's been created over hundreds of years. And a lot of the connections that form between different parts of that ecosystem, they form very organically. They're not something that you could replace or that you could create in a lab. It's something that's developed so slowly and with such complex relationships that it can't be replicated. And a lot of species rely on that. So if you took that away, you would also lose a lot of those species that live there. So I think that's one reason. And I think, yeah, the human and sort of cultural perspective as well, that it's a connection to our past. And it's something that we should be preserving for our future and for future generations as well.
Absolutely. What legal protection do they currently have? Because you mentioned that they have a little amount, but not nearly enough. What's currently in place to protect them?
So I wouldn't necessarily even say it's legal protection. It's more that so there's something called the National Planning Framework, which is what is used to make planning decisions, for example, which is when houses are built. So that does say that you should try to avoid building on ancient woodlands unless you can mitigate their loss. But I would certainly argue that you can't mitigate the loss of something that you can't replace, which is formed organically over such a long period of time. So there's sort of a recommendation against building on them. But realistically, if a big enough organisation or the government or a planner comes in who's got enough funds, they'll probably be able to overturn that.
Okay, that doesn't sound amazing.
No.
And talking of mitigation, which we've all heard kind of the big stories about infrastructure projects that have gone horribly wrong. In the news recently is HS2 again. Obviously, I spent a lot of time surrounded by friends and peers and colleagues and just people in general in my life that were campaigning in various forms, either on the front lines or elsewhere digitally, against HS2. And it has a lot of high speed rail too. And that's a recent leg of it, a major recent leg has been scrapped now, which is what we always said it would. I might have to look up the facts in a minute because I don't have them, but they tried mitigation. They cut down loads of ancient woodland.
That was really awful.
Yeah, and they attempted mitigation by replanting. And to replant kind of monoculture trees just in big rows will never, ever, ever work.
And it comes a bit in back to what you were saying about, you know, your average woodland versus an ancient woodland, because a lot of them can be plantations as well, which are monocultures and don't have that potential to support wildlife in the way that an ancient woodland does. And also, so I think 108 ancient woodlands were set to be destroyed or damaged severely by HS2. And obviously, unfortunately, a large number of them were. Some of them will have been on that northern leg. It's very difficult to find the precise data about it because it's not something that the HS2 or the government has wanted to make available. The hope is obviously that some of them will now not be damaged, but I've also heard people say that they're going to build more roads as a result, and that could also impact ancient woodlands. So that's, I think, why we need an overarching sort of legal protection, because if it's just, you know, we can always try and stop one development or one project, but the next one will come up. So it's about having that long-term protection.
Absolutely. And I've just quickly Googled the numbers because I wasn't familiar on them anymore. I've been out of that circle for quite a while. But the I think this was an article from 2019. Tens of thousands of trees will die as HS2 bosses say replacing them is more cost-effective than watering them. So that just shows the kind of lack of humanity in
what
that
kind of a
organization.
mindset is that?
So yeah, they did try mitigation. That's just one example of the many major infrastructure projects that are currently risking ancient woodlands. And they did try it and they absolutely failed miserably. And sadly, tens of thousands of saplings died because they thought it was better to replace them than water them and take care of them.
But I don't think any sort of real life intention was behind that. Obviously, if you wanted to recreate a new ecosystem, you could do that. You couldn't necessarily make an ancient woodland, or you couldn't guarantee it anyway, because we wouldn't be around for long enough. But I think if you really wanted to, you could start creating an ecosystem. But that's something you need to be committed to doing, not show in order to get your project through.
Yeah. Could you tell me anything about tree preservation orders? Because I know, talking of HS2 as an example, but this has happened across the country and the world, there's stories of kind of local authorities and people-led councils taking power into their own hands a little bit and giving out tree preservation orders to companies to stop them. This happened in Buckinghamshire, I think, against HS2.
Yeah.
Where they were told not to fell any more trees. What do you know anything about that, and how much protection it can give temporarily or permanently for specific trees or forests?
Yeah, I think they can definitely help, and they can, as you say, they tend to apply to individual trees. They don't tend to apply to whole woodlands. So it's obviously a very sort of intense way of, you know, to try and get enough tree protection orders. I have heard of people trying to do marathons where they all sit down and get, you know, tree protection orders all evening long and just do applications for them. But I think it's really protection that is meant to apply to individual trees. So you've got a beautiful oak tree in your city centre or something. It's not really intended for this purpose. So while I think it's a really great thing to have, I don't think it solves the issue. And also, I think they can also be overturned.
Yeah, I agree. I just wanted to touch on them as another thing that people could raise when listening to the podcast.
Definitely worth a try. I mean, I would try anything, like, especially if it was a local site that was under threat. I would just do all the avenues.
Yeah, as much as we possibly can. Yeah. What's the end game for your campaign? So when you've collected lots of signatures on your petition, when you've done your media campaigning, et cetera, et cetera, where will you go? Will you kind of go to the levels of government? What's the end game of this?
Yeah, so the aim is to get to Parliament and ideally to get some MPs behind it so we can have a debate around it, and hopefully somebody will put a motion to get change in planning law and general legal protection for ancient woodlands. So we'll be looking to MPs to support us as well for that. So it's getting the public behind it and then getting politicians behind it as well.
Absolutely. Do you have much hope for that in our current state of government?
Yes, actually. But I think there will always be individuals who will support it and MPs who will. And I think then it just becomes about having enough public pressure. I think in a way there are some things where it's harder to get the government to support them, like general climate goals, because that doesn't benefit them. And I think in a way, although it's cynical, individuals have got less to lose on this. So I think there's more chance of getting this through than perhaps stopping oil extraction, although that's very important.
Yeah, it's one of those things, isn't it, that you just have to persevere with and really just push through and hope that you can reach some people. You've obviously got the backing of the Woodland Trust behind you, which is really cool. How much help have they been in supporting your campaign? What kind of how do you work with them?
So they've mainly provided funding for it, so we'll be using that to run some adverts and get more people involved, and also for buying resources for the campaign. And they've also provided some advice in terms of social media usage and just networking opportunities to get more people involved and to reshare it and things like that.
Yeah, that's really great. And in terms of actually getting people on the ground and involved, obviously you want people to sign the petition, which is really good.
Yes.
And can you give a kind of big call out now to kind of anyone who wants to get involved and how they can do that? Because I know there will be a lot of people who see this as you said, a really important action that's potentially slightly more accessible than kind of frontline climate activism that we're currently seeing in the media. Obviously, everything has its place.
Exactly.
But yeah, how can people get involved with this?
Yeah, so the best thing to do would be to go either to our Instagram or our website. So our Instagram is at Ancient Woodlands UK and our website is ancientwoodlandsuk.com. And there's a sign up form. It's in the bio on our Instagram and it will also be on the website. And you can just put your details in and then somebody will contact you. And the main things that it would be amazing to have is more people to make content, or even if you just want to send us a video of you talking about how much you care about woodlands or why you care about ancient woodlands, that would be amazing. But if you'd like to get more involved organisationally, we've got a WhatsApp group. So if you fill that form and somebody will get in touch with you.
Amazing. I think that content on social media has definitely improved lately and been in a much better vehicle for communication and activism in all its forms. Have you seen a kind of a big increase in your audience through using that and through getting young people involved in making your content?
We've had some. It's hard because there's a lot of people on social media, I think, trying to grow platforms. And I think that can be difficult to get traction. But I think the more we have different avenues, like, you know, this and media and people signing the petition through adverts, we'll all come together. And I think that's how to build an audience from all the different angles.
Amazing. Yeah, absolutely. I think the last thing that I really want to touch on is a lot of the media that you've put on your Instagram that I was looking at last night was it's all about ancient woodlands and really beautiful photos and videos of ancient woodlands. Could you kind of talk about some of the ones that are slightly closer to city centres? Because the ones that a lot of people will know are quite far away usually. I know there's temperate rainforests and ancient woodlands up on Dartmoor, things like that, kind of in the middle of nowhere in the wilds of Devon. And yeah, could you talk about some that's a bit more easily accessible by everyone?
Yeah, so I've had that issue as well myself, actually, because I don't have a car. I think I've been once to Devon. So basically our videos are based on where the ambassadors are based. So the person who did the rainforest one is close by there. So that's how those ones have come about. Personally, I'm based in Oxford, so my local one is Whiteham Woods and it's about 40-minute cycle. So I think access to ancient woodlands is a really big issue, actually. There's not a lot of public transport, especially if you don't own a car. There's Hainault, which is near London, if you're in London, which I haven't actually visited yet, but I'm going to go down and visit soon. So that would be a really nice one if you're based in London. And generally, if you look at the Woodland Trust website, it will tell you what the nearest ancient woodlands are and how to access them, whether to access them by public transport and what links there are. But I do think that improving public transport generally is a big issue. It's actually something I've campaigned on before as well.
Could you tell me a little bit more, even though it's a little bit off subject and we might not be able to include it as much, about your campaigning in the past and around access to nature and how that's informed what you're doing?
Yeah, of course. So I started with, we had a green space that was under threat near me, and that's how I started campaigning. I started campaigning for that. And then slowly I found that this was happening all over the city. Like, there were lots of different ones that were under threat. Some were in rich areas, some were on council estates, but all of them were being threatened by this issue of overdevelopment. But obviously we do have a housing crisis as well. So it was a really difficult balance to strike. And from there, I got in touch with some of our local Green MPs. And I started campaigning on more climate issues in the city generally. So we did quite a few protests, and we managed to get some debates going as well about issues like how the economics in the city, it was actually, some of it was quite complex, bit over my head. But we got somebody, if you've ever heard of Kate Raworth, who does donut economics.
Yes.
So we got her involved, and she was looking at how we could have a more holistic approach to the city and campaigning, and like how wealth is spread in the city. But to get back to green spaces, there was something, I can't remember. You asked something, what was your question again? Sorry, I've gone off topic now.
Just how you kind of got involved in that access to nature campaigning and how it's informed what you're doing with Ancient Woodlands UK.
I think also just speaking to more people, for a while I was in a council house, and during that time I really found that I think people always think that depending on class background, you're less, more or less likely to care about nature, but that was so untrue. The people around me cared so much about nature and they had so much less access. And I thought that was really wrong. And I think that's something that really needs to improve. And the fact that if you don't have a car, you basically can't get to these places. It's like what you said, that they're all far away. They are far away.
Yeah.
It's really bad. Even my workplace, I work in outdoor ed freelance, and I have to cycle for like 40 minutes to get there. And there's no other way to get there. It's along a main road. And there's no public transport. So I think that would be amazing if we could get that changed.
Yeah, I was going to say that, yeah, my first kind of knowledge of what ancient woodlands came about when I was in Reading. And so I grew up in Reading, which is a really big town.
Yeah.
You'll know it, living
Yeah.
nearby.
Yeah.
And yeah, we have a remnant ancient woodland about 15, 20 minutes walk away from me called Louse Hill Copse that I've done some work at.
Yeah.
And yeah, I was volunteering for an organisation that connects local young people to their local green spaces within Reading.
Oh, well, that's amazing.
And they're really, really cool, really great organisation. And I was volunteering at one of their wild days, taking some photos quite a few years ago now. And the amount of people who were in the estate next door, in the housing estate next door, and had lived there for kind of 10, 15 years and never been to Louse Hill Copse, like, I don't know, 30 metres away, was huge. Like, it's not just about access, it's also about education, which is why this is so important. People might have wandered through there briefly, but until very recently, when they did some work with various different organisations to put up signage and stuff, there was nothing to say that it was a remnant ancient woodland or it had any of those features or it was
Yeah.
kind of anything like that. And so, yeah, definitely about access and education, which is why Ancient Woodlands UK is such a great campaign, I think.
Yeah. And hopefully we can get more people from all backgrounds involved as well, and also have those conversations about access, because I think it's so important. And it's not just Ancient Woodlands, it's all green spaces. I mean, if you think of sites, well, for example, owned by the National Trust, quite apart from the fact that you have to pay to get in, they're usually inaccessible. There's nothing nearby. Where I am, for example, without a car, you'd never get there. So
yeah, it's a really big issue and definitely something that I will be talking about further and unpacking a little more in a future episode. I think
that's
there's
great.
some one of those things that, yeah, I could talk for hours on.
Yeah.
Is there any kind of final, I think we've covered such a diverse range of topics
Yeah.
within Ancient Woodlands, and Zoom is telling me we are running out of time. But what any closing thoughts or anything you'd like to share before I kind of sign off?
I think just that if we believe that we can make a difference on a topic that we care about, I think you can, especially if you can get other people involved, and if you can communicate why you care, then I really think you can make these changes. And mine is Ancient Woodlands, but if somebody has something else they're really passionate about, I think go for it. And if you believe it, you know, can make a difference.
That's really great messaging and really important, I think, to keep that hope and positivity alive. We're going to finish with the final question, which I ask everyone, because it's very topical on the podcast. How do you take your coffee?
That's a great question. With milk, no sugar.
Perfect. Very simple. I like it. Yeah, I think that's kind of everything I have to talk about. And I think we covered everything important to say about the campaign,
yeah.
How to get people involved.
Yeah.
So, yeah, thank you very much for taking
your
time. We had
some meanderings about
a little bit here
about
and there.
Green space access.
But I think everything's interconnected. So
yeah,
nothing's really ever a tangent because, yeah, we are nature and nature is us. So we're all connected, and therefore all of our causes and the things we need to care about and protect have to be intersectional as well. So it's all good stuff. So yeah, thank you so much.
That's great. Can you link to the petition on it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And so how I usually do these is, this is actually quite, I might leave this in the recording, it's quite a good insight for people, is I just put kind of all the information that I can in the podcast description.
Oh, great.
So when you're searching on Spotify or Google or Apple Podcasts or whatever, there'll be live links to everything there.
Yeah, that's brilliant.
And then I can't put a link in a Instagram post, but when I share that post to the story, I can then share a couple more stories off that about that. So yeah, everything will be linked, and I will always endeavor to share what we've talked about on a podcast episode whenever I can.
Yeah, that's brilliant. Thank you. And if you want to do like a shared post, you can just like invite collaborator or whatever, and then we can put it on ours as well. That would be great.
Thank you so much.
Okay, thanks so much, George.
Thanks again to Lucy for taking the time to speak to me. You can find links to all her work and the campaigns we mentioned below. My featured coffee today is from Landmark Coffee. Unfortunately, I don't have any at home right now, but many cups of delicious Landmark Coffee from their market stall kept me going through a busy retail season of bookselling this past December. Landmark are local to me and focus on ethical, sustainable, rainforest-friendly and organically grown coffee. They choose to only work with suppliers and importers who invest directly in the welfare of coffee growers and their environment. I can't wait to get some in to brew at home this month. The link to order all their coffee will be down below, and if you're local to Truro in Cornwall, they tend to have a stall at the farmers market on Wednesdays and Saturdays. It's definitely worth a visit. Thank you all so much for listening. I've been your host, George Cheedman-Jones, and this is Coffee with Conservationists.